ROSICRUCIANANDMASONICORIGNS 453. It is self-evident that he who passed successfully through these arduous tests involving both natural and also supernatural hazards was a man apart in his community. Such an initiate was deemed to be more than human, for he had achieved where countless ordinary mortals, having failed, had returned no more. Let us hear the words of Apuleius when admitted into the temple of Isis, as recorded in the Metamorphosis, or Golden Ass. Then also the priest, all the profane being removed, taking hold of me by the hand, brought me to the penetralia of the temple, clothed in a new linen garment. For, perhaps, inquisitive reader, you will very anxiously ask me what was then said and done? I would tell you, if it could be law fully told, you should know it, if it were lawful for you to hear it. But both ears and the tongue are guilty of rash curiosity. Nevertheless, I will not keep you in suspense with religious desire, nor torment you with long-continued anxiety. Hear, therefore, but believe what is true. One approached to the confines of death, and having trod on the threshold of Proserpine, I returned from it, being carried through all the elements. At midnight I saw the sun shining with a splendid light, and I manifestly drew near to the gods beneath, and the gods above, and proximately adored them. Behold, I have narrated to you things, of which, though heard, it is nevertheless necessary. Sorry that you should be ignorant. I will, therefore, only relate that which may be enunciated to the understanding of the profane without a crime. Kings and princes paid homage to the initiate, the new born man, the favorite of the gods. The initiate had actually entered into the presence of the divine beings. He had died and been raised again into the radiant sphere of everlasting light. Seekers after wisdom journeyed across great continents to hear his words, and his sayings were treasured with the revelations of oracles. It was esteemed an honor to receive from such a one an inclination of the head, a kindly smile, or a gesture of approbation. Disciples gladly paid with their lives for the master's word of praise, and died of a broken heart at his rebuke. On one occasion Pythagoras became momentarily irritated because of the seeming stupidity of one of his students. The master's displeasure so preyed upon the mind of the humiliated youth that, drawing a knife from the folds of his garment, he committed suicide. So greatly moved was Pythagoras by the incident that never from that time on was he known to lose patience with any of his followers, regardless of the provocation. With a smile of paternal indulgence, the venerable master, who senses the true dignity of the mystic tie, should gravely incline the minds of the brethren toward the sublimer issues of the craft. The officer who would serve his lodge most effectively must realize that he is of an order apart from other men, that he is the keeper of an awful secret, that the chair upon which he sits is the seat of immortals, and that if he would be a worthy successor to those master masons of other ages, his thoughts must be measured by the profundity of Pythagoras and the lucidity of Plato. Enthroned in the radiant east, the worshipful master is the light of his lodge, the representative of the gods, one of that long line of hierophants who, through the blending of their rational powers with the reason of the ineffable, have been accepted into the great school. This high priest after an ancient order must realize that those before him are not merely a gathering of properly tested men, but the custodians of an eternal lore, the guardians of a sacred truth, the perpetuators of an ageless wisdom, the consecrated servants of a living God, the wardens of a supreme mystery. A new day is dawning for Freemasonry. From the INSOF. Efficiency of Theology and the Hopelessness of Materialism, men are turning to seek the God of Philosophy. In this new era, wherein the old order of things is breaking down and the individual is rising triumphant above the monotony of the masses, there is much work to be accomplished. The temple builder is needed as never before. A great reconstruction period is at hand. The debris of a fallen culture must be cleared away, the old footings must be found again, that a new temple, significant of a new revelation of law, may be raised thereon. 454 LECTURESONANCIENTPHILOSOPHY ROSICRUCIANANDMASONICORIGNS 455. This is the peculiar work of the builder, this is the high duty for which he was called out of the world, this is the noble enterprise for which he was raised and given the tools of his craft. By doing his part in the reorganization of society, the workman may earn his wages as all good masons should. A new light is breaking in the east, a more glorious day is at hand. The rule of the philosophic elect, the dream of the ages, will yet be realized and is not far distant. To her loyal sons, Freemasonry sends this clarion call: arise ye, the day of labor is at hand, the great work awaits completion, and the days of man's life are few. Like the singing guildsmen of bygone days, the craft of the builders marches victoriously down the broad avenues of time. Their song is of labor and glorious endeavor, their anthem is of toil and industry. They rejoice in their noble destiny, for they are builders of cities, the hewers of worlds, the master craftsmen of the universe. The pillars of Hercules. The city of the philosophic elect rises from the highest mountain peak of the earth, and here the gods of the wise dwell together in everlasting felicity. In Heti. Foreground are the symbolic pillars of Hercules, which appear on the title page of Bacon's Novum or Genuem, and between them runs the path which leads upward from the uncertainties of earth to that perfect order which is established in Heti. Sphere of the Enlightened. Chapter 20. The goal of Philosophy. Theode is the hope of the world. Here and now we are welding that great chain of tomorrows which extends from the instant to infinity. We live not for ourselves alone, but for all futurity. Our accomplishments survive us, for long after we have descended into the earth, the orders which we have established shall dominate the activities of men. The world is an ancestral shrine filled with the mortuary tablets of the honored dead. We bow before our illustrious progenitors. We are the substance of their aspirations, the consummation of their dreams, for today is the focal point of time. We are all that has been about to be projected into all that shall be. Each human soul holds eternity in suspension. Recognizing this truth, several modern scientists have formulated the theory that immortality is achieved through a succession of lives. That the father achieves immortality in his son, the son in his progeny, and so on to the end of generation. The torch of life which each expiring personality hands on to another does not go out, it is immortal, but he who bears it must perish. By the way, men are but incidents in the flow of life, yet they have a strange power, for while they cannot cause the vital flame to blaze up from nothingness, they are empowered to snuff it out, and when generations cease, the countless ages die together. To be is to be immortal, for that which has been can never utterly cease. The past hovers in the air like a mirage. Men feel its presence, they breath it in, and enveloped by it live their little now upon the surface of their polished mirrors. The ancient magi caught faint visions of forgotten times. Within the next century we shall discover that history is. 457. 458 Lectures on Ancient Philosophy. Written in the air, that so-called space itself is photographic. Preserving as on a sensitized plate the varied activities of created things. Egypt as a physical empire has long since crumbled into dust, but upon each minute particle of the atmosphere, the glory of ancient Egypt is preserved for all time. Men speak words, and their words seemingly vanish into nothingness, but in the living substances of the universe these self-same words are traced in everlasting characters to be read in some distant time by men as yet unborn. Thoughts unuttered are not wholly lost, nor do dreams perish because their dreamer dares not give them speech. Somewhere in the infinite vistas of space, impressed as it were upon the memory of the infinite end, sharing together a common immortality, all aspirations, all visions, and all deeds await the day when men with unfolding reason will bind all time into a common now. In his experiments with plants, the late Luther Burbank found substantiation for the scientific concept of immortality through progeny. The doctrine of natural salvation, as it is called, was demonstrated to Burbank through phenomena arising from the cross-pollination of plants. For example, Burbank pollinated a variety of plants bearing white flowers with another variety bearing colored flowers, and as a result secured blossoms which were wholly white, some wholly colored, and still others of mixed colors. Taking a white plant from this cross-pollination test, Burbank pollinated it with another white plant, the result being a number of new plants all white. Taking one of the latter, he again pollinated it with white, and the result was again white. This experiment was repeated 10 times. In every case the flowers were entirely white, but the 11th time several blossoms reverted to the original color of the plant, thereby proving that though latent for a considerable period the elements of the first cross-pollination survived to reappear again. The original colored shrub had died long before its activities reappeared among the white blossoms, but Burbank recognized in this phenomena the immortality of the colored flower which was reborn in its own progeny.